Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and every week I host this show in order to bring new ideas, new dimensions, and new spiritual innovations to the planet. New Realities is dedicated to exploring evolving human potentials in the evolving world. This series explores the ideas of how to become more conscious beings. I present programs that invite the viewer and listener to look at their automatic behaviors and take free reign of their body, mind, and spirit so that we can hope to inhabit a better planet. This program is a takeoff on a television show I've been doing about 15 years in Manhattan, and radio and internet radio is an expanding medium, and bbsradio.com is one of the innovators in the field, so I thought I'd bring this show to the radio and gain more listeners. And if people want to watch me on television, they can tune into mnn.org every Monday night, or if they're in Manhattan, you watch me 9 p.m. Monday, Channel 57. I'm also on YouTube at YouTube/New Realities. Tonight I have a very exciting guest, a person who, who's been a friend of mine for a long time, who has a lot of ancient and new information. Her name is Trisha McCannon. She's the author of Dialogue with the Angels, Dialogues with the Angels, which is a book that I am also featured in a chapter. And she's here to talk about some of her latest metaphysical discoveries, particularly alchemy and the whole understanding of what alchemy is and the alchemist's dream. Trisha, are you there?
I am indeed, Alan. Nice to talk with you again.
Yes, I know. This is exciting because, you know, we've been friends a long time, and I think we've always wanted to do an interview. And
I'm really
so much good stuff. Yes.
It's true. It's true. And I'm, you know, I was up in New York just recently and got a chance to see you, and you look like you're doing a fabulous television as well as radio show.
Well, and not only that, usually in the beginning of the program, I highlight some of the events that I'm promoting around the city and around the country, but I wanted to get right to you. But there is a big UFO conference that I'm part of, which is called Culture of Contact, that's coming up on June 22nd, 23rd, and 24th, and people can look up Culture of Contact on
the internet.
Is that
in New York?
That will be in New York, and it's a 60th anniversary celebration of the Kenneth Arnold sightings, who coined the word flying saucer, and the Roswell crash, which everyone knows.
That sounds like it's going to be a great show. I wish I could be there, but as you know, I've been ensconced teaching down here in the Southeast.
Well, I know. Trisha's in Atlanta, and she does workshops, and I guess we'll get into what it is that you are doing a little bit. Because
I was going to say, a lot of the time that you and I have known each other, Alan, I was speaking in about 10 U.S. cities and about 3 countries a year. And the last 2.5 years, I've kind of come off of the international circuit to really focus on writing this incredible series of books.
And, right. What's the name of that series?
It's called Decoding the Mysteries of the Ages. Decoding
nice.
The Mysteries of the Ages. And the very first one of the books is The Lost Years and Secret Teachings of Jesus, where we really go into the Hermetic codes of creation and alchemy and a lot of the amazing journey that he took during his 29 years of silence, where we don't hear.
And where do you get your information from? I mean, are you just accessing it from the Akashic records, shall we say? Or are you doing research?
You know that I'm a clairvoyant and that I have been a time walker who's been able to travel the time line for most of my life. And I've probably been reading, probably read for about 6,000 people professionally, internationally. I have clients who call me all the time from around the country, and I would welcome our listeners, if they're interested, I'll speak a little bit about my work.
Yeah, do, and give some information about how to find you and connect, and actually if you want to do readings, that's fine too.
That would be great. My phone number in Atlanta is 404-355-2211, and you can find me on the internet at TrishaMcCannonGateway.com and Trisha McCannon Speaks. And
that's MCCANNON, right?
Yes.
Your last
exactly.
name. And yes, Tricia, T-R-I-C-I-A.
Yes, Tricia. You got it. That's perfect. So, yes, I've been doing this amazing series. When I came off the road about 2.5 years ago and rolled up my sleeves to write these books, the second one, by the way, is called Isis, Horus, and the Hermetic Codes of Creation. The third.
So you go from Jesus, you introduce the series with Jesus, and then you go back to Egypt to kind of bring through the ancient knowledge?
Yes, actually, all through the book with Jesus, I'm tracing what he did in those 29 years where he studied in all these Hermetic mysteries, how he went to Celtic England and studied with the Druids in those universities. I've tracked him through to India and him studying with the Brahmins, and then he goes to the land where Buddha had his enlightenment experience and literally is received as the second Buddha that the first Buddha predicted would come in 500 years.
And this all comes to you because this sounds like new knowledge.
Let me say this book has 300 footnotes in it.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, this is the thing. As a time walker, I've gone back in time and seen things, and then I've gone to do the research to find the 3D evidence for what I've seen.
Great.
It's a very powerful combination. I also, you know, I come out of the world of commercial advertising and photography, and so I'm very visually based. So
right.
I've laid all these incredible visual codes through all of my books, which are great.
So they actually, it's the books themselves are sort of an initiation process.
Oh, Alan, you have got it. You just, like, know immediately what I'm talking about.
Because it's also what Nikki Scully and Linda Starwolf were trying to do in their last book, which I interviewed them on television, Shamanic Mysteries of Egypt, would take people through the initiation process. And I think ultimately that's what knowledge is about. Knowledge is about transformation. As you receive more knowledge, you are then at a higher state of vibration, and you've gone through initiation. If you truly receive that knowledge into your DNA, if you let the knowledge change you, wouldn't you say that's what you're about?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I think that I've been teaching. This is another thing that's been very exciting. While I've been off the road, on top of writing this series of books and doing a whole series of DVDs, I've been teaching. I taught a class in 2005 and 2006 called Earth Revelations 2012. And the last book in this series is exactly that title. And it's really about all the phenomenal changes that are coming and what I've seen clairvoyantly. And, of course, once again, I go out and do the research for it.
Well, I'd want to have a 2012 conference in New York, and I'd love to invite you.
You bet, and I think we have to practice. I think we need to do it for some years. This is what Andy Kane and I have been talking about, so we definitely want to get you involved in that.
Just a little window into the 2012. What's your basic thing? Do you think it's the end of time? Do you think we'll move into a whole new dimension? I mean, what's your basic impression about that?
Let me say that you're jumping into the future, and if you don't mind, I would really love to talk a little bit about the past because.
We don't want to spill the
beans. The seeds of the future are laid in the present, and the present seeds are laid in the past.
Okay.
And so part of what I'm doing with this series is going all the way back to the third book in the series is called The 12 Extraterrestrial Races That Seeded the Planet Earth.
Uh-huh.
If you can imagine.
Well, you're covering all the great topics that I like to talk about, alchemy, extraterrestrials, the mystery schools. This is exactly what makes up new realities as far as I'm concerned. That's my interest in all those fields. So no wonder we've been friends for so long.
It's so true, Alan. I think we've been friends for many millennia, actually.
We were in Sedona together. Didn't we go to Sedona?
Well, remember we were in Egypt together.
I didn't go to Egypt with you. Phil went to Egypt.
No. I don't mean this lifetime, Alan. I mean other lifetime. Yeah,
oh, right.
You know.
Those times in Egypt. Oh, okay.
Yes, right.
All right.
This is why we're both involved in bringing out. This is why here you are supporting me in bringing out the Egyptian information.
Well, I think Yeah, I think tonight, though, what we can really focus on is what you call the alchemist dream about these inner transformation.
Perfect. My
alchemist.
Pleasure.
Okay, so you do a class on this, but like let's drop some seeds and give some information about what I know about alchemy is it is an outer and inner transformation. The metaphor of lead into gold was turning the body into spirit. Is that where you begin?
That is in fact the quest of the great work, as they call it, and the quest of alchemy. And it is not only physical, but it is metaphysical. It is not only true, but it is transcendentally true, which means it really is an alchemy of the personality self from the drudgery and restrictions of the egoic nature into the higher octaves of the soul nature to become what the Egyptians talked about, which was the Bennu bird.
The new bird, the phoenix rising out of its own ashes.
The phoenix that dies and is reborn. And this is really at the heart of all the great mysteries.
And all the shamanic initiations as well that were about that, the dying to the old self and being reborn to the new self.
It's totally true. It's true. And one of the things that's so profound is the Jesus mysteries, which are just absolutely beautiful. I love Jesus. He's one of my favorite guys. But, you know, those mysteries are actually based on the Osirian and the Isian mysteries.
In what way? Go through what the Osirian mysteries were, because people aren't really familiar.
Yeah, to do that, we must tell the story of who Osiris was and who Isis was. And
uh-huh.
This is a very powerful story. It's one of
Well, they were a husband and wife and brother and sister, weren't they?
Yes. Well, let me
okay.
tell a little bit. Because
Go ahead. You tell your story. Go ahead.
This is where the joy of, let us say, archetypal mythology and archetypal living exists. It's sort of like there are these templates from the higher worlds that come down and actually take birth in the world. And Isis and Osiris and Jesus and Mary were those same vibrational templates. They just
right.
came in completely different ages of the world. And
you
the
mean
story,
like soulmates in a sense. They represented the archetypal male and female balance of the yin and yang. Is that what you're saying?
They totally did. In the Christed and the Sophia aspects.
Uh-huh.
The Christed and Sophia. Isis was really the female Christ of her age. She redeemed
uh-huh.
the whole planet. And so the story, just sort of briefly for our listeners that don't know, is that Osiris and Isis were both the daughters of Nut, the goddess of the heavens, the goddess of the stars. But Isis's father was Thoth, the great...
Isis's father and Osiris's father was Thoth.
No, Osiris's father was Ra.
They had different fathers but the same mother.
Yes, but Ra and Thoth got along quite well. Ra was sort of the head of Egypt, and Thoth had been the chief counselor forever. And so they always, in fact, one of Thoth's name was Tongue of Ra, the mouth
uh-huh.
of Ra, the one who you know, enacted the will or the word of
uh-huh.
Ra, Brother Ra.
So
no problem.
Thoth has this also a special significance, especially to you, and also as a level of consciousness, as a communicator.
Yes, well, Horus is a whole other thing when we get there. Let's not jump
and
ahead.
And Thoth, though. Thoth is himself. But I mean, you want to go into who Thoth was as an Egyptian?
Let's just speak for a moment about, because Thoth oversees all great mystery schools, and I work with Thoth a great deal. But this is what we want to say about Isis and Osiris, that mm-hmm. they were married, and there were a total of four of them, Nephthys and... Set or Typhon, where we eventually get, Satu was his real name. We finally got the word Satan, you know, from that, because he sort of went to the dark side of the force. They were married. So there was the lunar couple, the dark couple, and he was sort of the dark evil, and she was the dark good. Okay. And then the other couple was the solar couple, Isis and Osiris.
And that's why they're represented by the solar disk, right?
Yes, exactly. Well, okay. Osiris was an agrarian king, but he played music, he sang, he understood the whole arts of civilization. And after the flood, he traveled around the world for literally hundreds of years, helping to recreate civilization. And he was beloved by everybody. And Isis, meantime, held the fort, so to speak, and rebuilt civilization in Egypt.
Well, this is, you're saying, after the Atlantean flood, the flood
yes.
of Noah?
Yes.
Okay, I'm with you.
The flood,
okay.
11,500 years ago.
Okay, I got you.
When this happened, what occurred was actually because there were two half-brothers, even though Ra was... Ra would be three generations up. He would have been the grandsire of Set's father. So consequently, in truth, Ra could have just turned to his son Osiris and said, you get the whole kingdom. But what he did to try to be fair was he broke the kingdom into Upper and Lower Egypt. And he gave Osiris Northern Egypt, where the pyramids are, and he gave Setu, or Set, Lower Egypt, down where the Nile begins to run down from the mountains. So what happened was Set's father was afraid that he was going to lose the whole line of lineage. So he sort of whispered in his ear and said, you know, your half-brother is going to take the whole kingdom. You have to act, et cetera, et cetera. And so he built, you know, on fear and lies and illusion, his own fears. He pushed his son ambitiously, and Setu took the bait. So Setu, or Set, rigged this party where he invited Osiris, and he knew Isis wouldn't be there.
Uh-huh.
And to protect her husband. And
because she was totally intuitive and she could have seen it coming, right?
Well, let us hope. But
yeah.
What happened is that he had this beautiful golden coffin, all highly decorated, built, and he had it built exactly to Osiris' size. And so they, you know, pretended to sort of like have a bit of a party joke and say, well, whoever can fit in it can have this gorgeous case. So, of course, one by one, people got in. And finally, Osiris got in no sooner than he did. Of course, the 72 co-conspirators that were working with Setu literally sealed the coffin, put molten lead around it, took it down, and threw it in the river.
Uh-huh.
So he was sealed alive. This is horrendous.
Uh-huh.
So, of course, Isis heard about this. She cut the locks of her hair. And this is one of the reasons why the priest of Osiris many times would have shaved heads in honor of her cutting her hair.
I didn't know that. Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
And so she realized that she was in grave danger because politically all he had to do was get her, rape her, and then claim the kingdom, the whole kingdom, and have a child with her.
Uh-huh.
So, of course, this is really what he wanted to do. So she had to go undercover, and she took her nephew, Nephthys' son, Anubis. And Anubis, and she, you know, traveled, you know, clandestinely through all the cities. And eventually they heard wind that the coffin was in a place called Bilbos, which is up near Jordan.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's on the western inner sea.
Uh-huh.
And they followed it up there, and Isis was so intuitive. She went by herself, and she had to mask herself, so she didn't want anyone to really know who she was. So she sat by the well in the center of the town, and these serving women of the queen came, and she plaited their hair, and they began to smell with the perfume that she had. And when they went back to the palace, the queen said, where did you get that incredible perfume? And they told about this beautiful, strange woman that had plaited their hair. So the queen sent for her. And Isis, we remember, was trying to go undercover because she didn't really want to be found. And the queen offered her a job as the nursemaid to her child.
Uh-huh. And I thought she wanted to be the nursemaid to get in with the queen because she knew that
that was her plan.
Okay.
Exactly. That was her plan.
Okay.
And so, you know, she could feel Osiris close, because, as you said, she's very intuitive.
Right.
But she didn't know exactly where he was. And so she actually, the story was that she took a fondness to the queen's son and began to bathe him in the fires of immortality. And one day the queen came in and found her and, of course, screamed.
And freaked out because she was holding him over the fire in order to give him the immortal body.
Exactly. And so, of course, then Isis revealed who she was. And she said, I feel that he's in this column. They cut down the column to the sycamore tree, sycamore tree that had been made into a pillar. And she didn't even, she got the coffin out of it, but she didn't open the coffin while she was there. She was scared to. So she finally got on board the boat on her way back to Egypt.
Uh-huh.
And they talk about how she took the lid off the coffin, and she saw him still perfectly preserved, and how she threw herself on his body and began to weep.
I
mean, she really went through a lot.
I thought there was a part of the story where his body was cut up into pieces, or are we getting to that?
We're getting to that.
Oh, okay.
So she arrived in Buto, and she went in search of help. She went to try to find her father's Thoth to see if there was something that they could do. And when she came back, what had happened is his body had been taken. Setu, very crafty that he was out hunting. And he found the coffin, and he found his brother's body, and he hacked it into 14 pieces. And they say they scattered them through the Nile.
Mm.
Now, there's many stories about, some say it took her 3 days, some say it took her 3 months, some say it took her 3 years. There's all these different stories.
But three seems to be something involved in that, right? Three.
Yes. So then she called upon Anubis. And Anubis created the first funerary rites, where they wound all a linen wrap around all the pieces of the body. And Isis actually...
They wrap linen around every part of the body?
Yes, like a mummy.
Like what?
Like a mummy.
Oh, I see.
For the first funerary rites.
Oh, because Anubis is the god over mummification.
Anubis is the god over mummification, and Osiris became the lord of light in heaven, or what they call the halls of Amenti, the lord of light that greets the soul when they come to the other side and gives them forgiveness.
All right.
In our story, Isis, actually, they talked about how she turned herself into a kite and fanned her wings over him. And impregnated herself. And from this, she gave birth to the young child, Horus.
She found all the parts of the body, right?
Except the penis.
The phallus, right.
There's a phallus missing.
She never found the phallus, poor guy.
Well, I mean, see, these stories, they could be literally true. But they could be metaphorically true.
But you know, I was just noting, in the Temple of Abydos in Egypt, there is a hieroglyph of Isis putting the phallus back on Osiris. Do you know about that? And the way I heard it is that she laid on the parts of the body, and as she completed them, but he infused his soul essence into her, and she became Isis Osiris in one body. But out of that infusion of energy, she was able to give birth to the, as a sort of without impregnation, as a virgin birth, you know. So
I think that is the perfect description. So she became known not only as a divine goddess, virgin mother, but she also gave birth to the redeemer of his age, Horus, as Jesus was the redeemer of his age.
Uh-huh.
But where were we? I lost my place.
No, but I want to know. So, I mean, this is a great story, but how does this then apply to the act of initiation with the people that you work with? I mean, you tell them the story, but then what does the story do?
Right. Well, Right, but let me just say, I'll be glad to share a little of that, but you're not going to, our viewers are probably not going to get initiated tonight. There's a little more to it than listening on the radio.
No, but I just want to know how the story relates
how
to
the story applies
into,
is that
yes.
Isis, the Divine Mother of Unconditional Love and Devotion, so to speak, who was the Christ of her age, was able to bring her husband back from the dead.
Uh-huh.
So the story has to do with resurrection. So Isis, through love we are redeemed.
Uh-huh.
That would be a shorthand way of saying it. Through love we are resurrected. Through the Divine Mother of Eternal Devotion, we are able to die and be reborn.
So do you talk to your students about the two parts in us, the male and female aspect in us?
I do indeed.
Each one of, and
I do indeed. You know, the mysteries. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. The mysteries, go ahead.
The mystery school that I am teaching, you know, I have a lodge called the Phoenix Fire Lodge, the Order of the Eagle and the Dove.
Uh-huh.
And like all great mystery schools, it's on three levels.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, the Crown of Isis was three levels.
Yeah.
For example, the Druids, three levels. The Oviats, who were the healers. The bards, the singers, and the history keepers. They had to memorize over 1,000 songs.
And well, are the three levels then the body, mind, and spirit, in a sense? Is that what the three levels are?
Well, sort of, but the Egyptians believed that we were eternal souls, that was the essence of who we are, our ba, so to speak, that's our soul, but that we had a mental, a physical, and an emotional body. So I think you're completely on the right track.
Uh-huh. So in these three levels, in your mystery school, people go through these three levels of awareness using their own life. Is that what you do with them?
Well, that's one way of putting it, yes. Our own life is definitely the paint box from which we draw the paints.
Uh-huh.
So, absolutely. You know, I'm hoping to come. I just, you know, was in New York recently, and I'm hoping to come back and do a workshop or two
uh-huh.
or three, maybe begin a series up there of the Alchemist Dream, which are just stunningly beautiful.
Well, let's talk about that, because I'm also going to make this available. I mean, people can listen to the archives of this show on bbsradio.com, and so this could sort of be an introduction to the Alchemist Dream.
Well, that would certainly be appropriate. When I teach the mystery school, that is a little different from what I would probably do in New York. The depth and breadth of the information I've been teaching in the school is such that even within, a weekend, and we have, you know, the first level is 6 months or 6 weekends, and it can be 6 months, 9 months. I can spread it out as long as we want to. And the second level is all of the Egyptian mysteries, and that's a whole year. There are 9 weekends in a year. So in those, we still can't cover everything we have to cover because we do a lot of processes in those. But,
like, what kind of processes do you mean? Like, just
it's a mystery, darling.
Oh,
you know, you keep wanting to, like,
I want you to spill the beans. I know.
I'm not going to. I mean, I'm.
No, I'm not saying you have to give away the process, but I mean, just give people a kind of taste of what kind of work they might have to do. You don't have to kind of do it, but like. I mean,
let us say this. In the first level of the school, I teach them the directions of time and space and the wheels of the minerals, the plants, the animals, and the human kingdoms from the twisted hair. They begin to work with the goddess, where they begin to have a lot of direct experiences with the goddess herself, not only mentally but emotionally, and in terms of doing inner chamber work. Inner temple work, and then we do a lot of outer temple work. I'm very big on ceremony, so I'll take people up to the top of a mountain, or I'll take them to an island on a lake with torches.
Uh-huh.
I'll take them, we've done baptism rites under the moon. There's a lot of things that we have done. You know, I believe in the right and the left brain. And so I teach from the right eye of Horus and the left eye. So they have a workbook that's about 3 inches thick. And it's lots of fun. And so I'll teach a bit, then we'll get up and we'll do a process. Then sometimes the process is with one another. Sometimes the process is going out and doing something quite extraordinary. Sometimes it's something that they have to do alone.
But all these processes help develop one's own connection to their own spirit. Would you say that?
Totally. And it begins to open you up to clairaudience, clairvoyance, clairsentience, and also to the inner alchemy, the work of coming to bringing healing the psyche, healing the emotional body, healing the mental body, healing all the bodies. And it's fun. I mean, at the same time, it's not like, you know, you think you're going to do healing. You think you're going to have a really fun, wonderful weekend. That's sort of what you think. And then there's always the magic part. And so we do magic.
What does that mean?
Well, again, you know, what is magic? It is the combined use of thought, mind, and will with the universal current to create change.
Oh, I like that. Let me say that. Let me write it down. Say that again. Magic.
I have no idea what I said.
Is the
probably
combined,
something like the complete alignment of mind, body, and will. Enjoying thought and sacred ground and sacred time and sacred space with conscious intention, invoking profound deities from all the archetypal and spiritual hierarchical realms, and sending a shower of love and intentionality for whatever you intend, you know, a job, abundance, service to the planet, a wonderful life companion or mate, whatever it is that you will, as long as it is in the highest good. And that is the difference in, let us say, high vibrational archetypal communication with the inner realms and more personal lowly magic, if you don't mind my saying so.
I understand. No, there's magic that comes from the ego and through manipulation,
yes.
And there's the higher
and
magic, which is service.
Which is really about stepping through the worlds, pulling back the veils and stepping between the worlds. And I really have, you know, those 7 rays that they say people come in on, I came in on the ray of an archetypal magician, shaman, woman with a lot of, like, of the love wisdom ray thrown in there for good measure.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. And it's a good thing, too, because if you're doing the higher level, you know, bringing in those higher frequencies without the love and wisdom, you wouldn't even be able to get there.
Mm. So the alchemist dream, is this what you're talking about? Is this when you talk about the work of the alchemist dream?
The work of the alchemist dream is this. It is a process of becoming an enlightened solar being, doing what the Egyptians said, becoming a star.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Becoming a star. And that's a tall order. This was what the pharaohs hoped, that by the depth and the devotion of their service. And I think this was very true in the Old Kingdom, probably a lot of the Middle Kingdom, and maybe even some of the pharaohs in the New Kingdom, too.
So you say by becoming a star, what I get from that is that we take this earth body and we raise the vibration until we then radiate love and light and life out. That is what I think a star does. You know, it radiates out creation. Is that what they meant by becoming a star?
I think that those are definitely meanings that would apply.
What do you get?
I think it's all of the above. And this is where, you know, a lot of these things are literal and archetypal because they're literal and they're multidimensional. For example, you know, I perceive the consciousness of the sun as totally alive.
Uh-huh.
I perceive the it is literally the controller and regulator of our whole solar system.
As a conscious being.
As a conscious being. And one of the things that happens at the harvesting of every 26,000-year age is there's an opportunity for the harvesting of consciousness of everything that's taken place on the in the solar system to occur.
Mm-hmm. So
all the
what
experience
is, yeah, okay. Uh-huh.
gets kind of sent back to the center and then relayed from our sun to the great central sun.
So the great central sun then is actually a higher consciousness of our solar sun.
Exactly, exactly.
And that's the great overlord of our dimensional space in a sense then.
Really, not only our dimensional space, but all of the ancients talked about the overlay of multi-dimensions, and it's so wonderful that in quantum physics now they've come to the place of saying that they know there are at least 10 different dimensional levels, and there could be more, which I think is just so perfect. Don't you?
Well, it just makes sense, but I don't really understand what they're saying. I mean, it's hard to grasp more than maybe 3, 4, 5 maybe dimensions if you're really out there. I don't really know where all those other dimensions are, except in string theory they're sort of rolled up inside of each other. I mean, I don't quite understand it. I mean,
I think it's definitely something we can contemplate on for a long time, and there are many brilliant people from philosophers to scientists to physicists to cosmologists who have worked on this. But for me, I actually see, you know, I'm a seer, and seers are clairvoyants. They all have their antennas pointed in different directions. So some are pointed, let's say, to the fourth dimension where they get to talk to the dead. I mean, they're not really dead, but they're not on
the other levels of consciousness. Yeah, yeah.
There's some people that have their clairvoyant antenna pointed to the stock market, you know.
Right.
I would never claim to be one of those people.
Well, that would be a good one.
That would be a good one. But my clairvoyant antenna is pointed to the highest dimensional levels of who we are as a soul, how is the structure of the higher angelic kingdoms, the Council of Nine, the Nine Orders of the Angels, the seven, the 12 dimensional levels, the 12 sub-octaves, the seven that are in the lower world. I mean, I travel up and down all these dimensions when I do past life readings for people. So,
well, I think people should know that we really do exist on all those other levels. We are truly multidimensional beings. If there are 10 dimensions, we exist on all 10 of those dimensions as
exactly. And it's directly related to what we're doing in this lifetime. This is something I can say unequivocally in 6,000 readings, this has always been true, that who we are on those different levels and who we have been is directly related to why we came into this lifetime, our purpose, our karma or our wounding, and our dharma or our higher purpose in life. So this has to do with the path of mastery. And this is also part of what I teach in these mystery schools, is for each person to find the path of their karma and follow it to the path of their dharma or their fulfillment.
Right, and dharma is why they've incarnated in the first place, in a sense.
The work
why
that they have come
that
to
they
do.
Came to do. Right, and so that's also connected with the Kabbalah as well, would you say?
This is true. Yes, you could say that. How would you view that?
Well, because the Kabbalah gives you a direction in life to complete what they say has been out of balance. So you have this road map, and you see where you show up and what's missing in you that the tree of life of the Kabbalah provides, and then you sort of follow that path. You look at the ramifications of where you're at on your evolution. So I would say in that sense, the Kabbalah tree of life is a map for your own soul. And
so Where would
the
you
22
say you
are
in that?
Where am I?
Yeah.
Well, me personally. Thank you for asking. I'm
That's
trying
a question,
to.
Probably.
I'm trying to move from knowledge into wisdom. I've collected a lot of knowledge, but I think that's the upper realm there, from knowledge to wisdom. I don't know what the actual Hebrew name is, but
Brina is the female aspect of wisdom.
Right, and like Sophia. But so I'm trying to take the knowledge that I've learned, because I've collected a lot, and digest it so they become experience and wisdom, because I think wisdom comes from experience, but you need knowledge as a way to show you the process of digesting new experiences. So we might have the same experience, but with knowledge, they become higher levels of wisdom. Does that make sense?
It does, and this is interesting.
Did I lose you?
No, I didn't get lost. So what I would say about this is, this reminds me actually of this chapter I'm writing right now in my books, where I'm discussing the Egyptian belief that there were two types of intelligence. Mm-hmm. One type is what they call cerebral intelligence. It's dualistic. It's higher, lower, shorter, taller, fatter, skinnier.
Right.
It's all dualistic, and it's analytical. It's masculine.
It's learned. It's for learned wisdom. It's the wisdom of the mind. Yeah.
It's not so much wisdom. It's judgment, calculation, analysis.
Right. It's the book learning. I think Rumi has a poem about that as well. Wisdom of knowledge of the mind and versus the heart. Is that the other part?
Oh, you should turn me on to that poem. I'd like to.
The intuitive parts of our self. Maybe I'll just find that right now. I'll just find that poem. Talking. So what's the other part in your book?
Okay, so the other intelligence is what is called intelligence of the heart. And it is innate, and it is unified.
Mm.
And it penetrates beyond the world of form.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the language, really, of hermetics. And I'm a hermeticist.
And that's what you're teaching, that particular language of, I mean, that how to tap in and understand the language of the heart is really your work, isn't it?
It is, in fact. And I do it using both the right and the left sides, the cerebral intelligence and the innate. But it's like we're going from the outer anteroom of knowledge into the heart of beingness, into that innate intelligence.
Well, let me read you a little Rumi poem here, okay?
Okay, well, listen, I want to get a pen and actually write down what couplet it is or piece.
Okay, but I can call you after the show and tell you that. But,
I'd love that.
But I will do that. But it just says, and this is about the wisdom of the heart. He says, those who don't feel this love pulling them like a river, those who don't drink dawn like a cup of spring water or take in sunset like supper, those who don't want to change, let them sleep. This love is beyond the study of theology, that old trickery and hypocrisy. If you want to improve your mind that way, sleep on. I've given up on my brain. I've torn the cloth to shreds and thrown it away. If you're not completely empty, wrap your beautiful robe of words around you and sleep.
So, oh, my God. That is awesome.
That's
that
from Coleman Barks' translation of Rumi in a collection called Like This. Yeah. No, Rumi understood that knowledge of the heart, wisdom of the heart that you're talking about. You know, he says something like, science and theology are just whims of the wind. If you knew the knowledge of your heart, that is full surrender. You know, it's a different way of knowing. I think that's what you're talking about. There's other ways of knowing beyond your intelligence, your childish intelligence, he calls it. That's what Rumi calls this knowledge of our brain. So that's where I'm at. I'm trying to, in my own process, go from knowledge of the mind to the wisdom of the heart. You know.
Well, Well, that is definitely the initiate's quest, and that is exactly to the point of the Philosopher's Stone, where we are turning the lead into gold. So that's a pretty powerful point to stop at.
Okay. Thank you, Tricia. Thank you for being a guest on New Realities.
I love your show, and we can talk about a million things. This is just
Well, let's do some more shows in the next coming week, especially if you're coming to New York. And
great. Next week I'm teaching the Egyptian weekend of the goddess Nephthys. So we can't do it next week, but we can go for the Sunday after that, perhaps.
Well, just give the listeners a little overview of what you are teaching, just so they get a sense, and you can give your number again, upcoming courses.
Sure. My phone number in Atlanta is 404-355-2211, and you'll either get me or you'll get my machine, and be sure and leave your name and phone number a couple of times. I do clairvoyant readings for people all around the country, and I do astrological readings, and all the rest of the work I do has to do with spiritual healing. I have discovered through doing these 6,000 readings that many times people are stuck by things that no matter how hard they try, they don't know how to shift. And so my work has to do with shifting very core levels of energy, vows, curses, bindings, cords, erroneous belief systems, and old soul contracts. And there are about 7 healing modalities that I work in that cover that. To do the healing work, though, I actually have to see you in person. The readings I can do over the telephone.
Wait, so you're saying people can do a lot of therapy, a lot of willing, but they have some energetic bonds around them that still stop them from completing what they need to?
Yes, one of the best ways to explain this is just to imagine that they're force live projectors, and they're all projecting a picture onto a wall, and that wall is your life. And those 4 slide projectors are the busy beta brain of the conscious mind, the alpha mind, subconscious creative mind, the theta, deep subconscious spiritual mind, and the delta, which is the soul mind or the higher self. And most of our problems, some, of course, are in the conscious level, but most of our problems are in alpha and in theta. And so in order to change the slide, if people just keep trying to change the top slide, and the picture doesn't change enough. And that's because the slide they want to change is in the second carousel or the third carousel.
And they don't have access to it.
So in order to change those things, it's very difficult for any one of us to do it for ourselves. We actually have to have help, because we can't be the healer and the healed. We can't be the patient and the doctor at the same time. We have to be willing to go down into the alpha, theta, state of consciousness and really begin to shift. And so this is one of the reasons why sometimes when you do very deep retreats, there'll be a shift, because you'll spend some time down there. But if you just do two-day or three-day silence and meditation retreats, sometimes, you know, you get what you need, and sometimes you don't. You know, it's like the 2 yin. This is the whole thing about the middle path that Jesus talked about, Lao Tzu and Buddha. This is very much about the 2 pillars of knowledge and walking between those pillars, the yin and the yang, the right and the left brain, you know, knowledge and wisdom. Everything we're talking about is the same. It's like a whole.
You have to go into those altered states of consciousness, you're saying, in order to...
In order to get the work done and to do the inner alchemy.
But you help facilitate that.
Yes, yes, and that's what we're doing in the mystery school part of the time.
I see. So that's the purpose of being in a mystery school instead of just doing it on your own, is that there's facilitators there and you...
Well, you go from the left to the right, the left to the right. When you're in the middle of it, you have no perspective. It's like the eagle that flies over the forest and the person is down on the ground stuck in a grove and can't find their way out. In this case, I'm acting as the eagle energy that's holding the field with the bigger vision.
The hierophant is what they called it in the Egyptian mystery schools,
exactly,
right?
The hierophant, yes.
So you're acting as the guide.
Yes, Hiero means gods, and Font is an initiate. So it's an initiate of the gods, a high initiate of the gods or the goddess.
So you hold the space so people can then go deeper into themselves and access their own knowledge and integrate that balance between the left and right, the yin and the yang.
Indeed, indeed. And this is let me say that we started, I was going to get off the phone if you remember, but you're so fascinating. It's very easy not to. So let me just say that I would be thrilled to come back. We can pick this up, and we can actually do it on emotional healing if we want to. And,
let's do it. Well, you can work on me. I can use some of
that. You're so
but
cute.
No, we'll do another show. Definitely we'll do another show in the upcoming weeks.
That sounds absolutely great. And let's look forward to setting the time for me to come to New York, and we will go over what that program is once we sort of have our dates, and we'll let people know. I love New York. I love coming there, and I've been gone for about 2.5 years, and it'll just be a pleasure to see everybody again.
It would, and I'll put it out on this radio show and my television show, and it'll be great to have you back in New York because I think you have a little piece of information most people don't have. You know, or that you have a piece of that adds to a lot of people on the spiritual path are looking for more of these connections, you know, and you have that, so stop holding out on us.
I'm very
all right, Tricia.
Thank you so much, Alan, and give me a shout back about Rumi, okay?
I will. I'll call you back after the show. Thank you. Thanks, Trish, and I'll talk to you soon. I've been talking to Tricia McCannon, who is a psychic clairvoyant healer, intuitive. She takes people on mystery tours to Egypt, and she actually...
I'll be going to Italy in the fall.
Actually, we should do a show about Dom and her also.
That would be great. I've been going for 8 years now.
And I just went there, and it was a great 2 weeks of truly immersed in a mystery culture. I mean, they're really trying to do something different here.
They're lovely people too. Very good intentions and very good hearts.
So, all right, I thought you hung up, but I just wanted to make a few other announcements. And
I'm signing off now. Lots of love.
That's okay, you can hang on.
New York.
Okay, thanks. Okay, this is Alan Steinfeld and New Realities, and I also do a television show every week, Monday nights, 9 p.m. on Channel 57 in Manhattan. And there's a bunch of other events that I'm co-sponsoring and hosting. One is called The Divine Feminine Return with an organization called Sexy Spirits. That is a summer solstice celebration where we have many people from the divine feminine tradition speaking about different ways of celebrating their sacred sexuality, who they are as who we are as sexual beings. And there'll be talks by Patricia Taylor. There are keynote speech by Patricia Taylor, who is now a student of Kashmir Shaivism, which is a originator of a lot of tantric traditions. Also on June 22nd, 23rd, and 24th at the Pioneer Theater in New York will be a weekend of UFO Culture of Contact. That will be in honor of the 60th anniversary of the flying saucer sightings of 1947. So this is 60 years later, how UFOs have influenced our culture. We'll be showing films like Contact and... I think Close Encounters will be shown there. And a lot of speakers, Bud Hopkins and Jeremy Vaney, who was a guest on this show. So if you have any questions about the Culture of Contact weekend of June 22nd, 23rd, and 24th, please email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. And you can also listen to this show on its archives. And I also want to... say you can watch look at my website, which is called New Realities at earthlink.net. It's newrealities.tv if you want to kind of listen to some other guests that have been on the show and archives of the show and other shows. So newrealities.tv is the website. And I'm going to end with this song that I like to play at the end of this show, which is called The Night Before the Future, which is a sort of a song about UFOs, which will be on the upcoming shows. So it shows about UFOs, UFO cultures, and how we have been really consciously or unconsciously interacting, as like Trish said, on many levels of being. So here's Duke Williams singing, as I sign off for Alan Steinfeld, New Realities, The Night Before the Future.
Might not quite be, you know.